day, a glass of ocean slipping down, my throat and landing on my hopes and dreaming of the maps, no hidden grids, I'm fleeing. I worship you like holy days, lying on my back, seeing clouds and rays, drinking lime and bitter from my lemonade. White horses every time won't do.
Welcome to Black Talk. So if you don't know what's going on, this is a radio takeover by the BSN, which is the Black Student Network at McGill. My name is Sydney. I'm going to be hosting most of the show today. So basically what's going to happen is we have a ton of interesting people coming in to talk about the community, blackness, personal anecdotes, their art, their work, their interests, and then we have curated playlists that showcase the best of the black community. So I'm just going to give you guys the schedule for today. So from 11 until about 11:30 to 11:45, I'm going to be talking about like beauty standards, cosmetics, and like hair, which are really loaded topics. And then I will be handing it over to our first year representative at the BSN, who's going to be interviewing two artists that we have coming in, so from 11:45 to 12:15. Then we have our VP Political Matthew, who's going to be giving us like a spoken word essay from 12:15 to 1:15. Then we're going to hand it back over to Luca, who will be doing a first year segment. Then we have an interesting 15-minute segment by a Concordia student who's going to be talking about the importance of access to books and literacy. Then we have some music for you guys. Halfway through the day, we'll have a short break because CKUT as a separate show. Then at 5 again, we have Chelsea, who's a music student, who's going to be talking about what it's like owning a business and being a full-time student as a Black woman at McGill. We have some more music. Then we have an interview with a community worker in Montreal North. Some more music, and then we'll be able to listen to some archives from 1994, in which the BSN like hosted a panel during Black Talk and discussed sexism. Then from 9 to 9:30, you guys will be able to hear my response to that. Then we have some more music, and then we will wrap it up. So I want to start today by talking about like beauty standards, which are beyond complicated, but I think there's more to it than even like the internet and like all the discourse that surrounds it likes to talk about. I'd like to talk about like the whole clean makeup trend that's going around, because I have issues with it personally. This trend is really interesting to me because I'm someone who doesn't wear a lot of makeup. Like, I just, not because I like choose to or not, I just don't really know how to, and I kind of like started it really late, so I kind of shy away from it. And so this trend, one would expect me to be like more on board with it because it advocates more for like skin tints, which are more like manipulable than like foundation and things. It's like less heavy makeup, so people, it's like kind of easier for beginners or for people who like have less makeup or wear less makeup. But I want to talk about how that's rooted in purity politics, the whole clean look. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, clean makeup is the idea of like looking clean and sophisticated and like having all your baby hairs laid down all the time and having very light coverage makeup and having like quote unquote like glass skin, if you know what that means, just like really like a perfect complexion. And it's part of the whole like that girl trend on Instagram, which is going around and doing a lot of things to a lot of people. But what something that I think is interested is, so I like did a little research here and I went like online and was like, how do I get the clean makeup look? And like one of the biggest things that comes up is having non-textured hair and always having like straight hair. Like people recommend getting perms, like permanently straightening your hair. People recommend also wearing small hoops that aren't too, quote unquote, and I'm getting this like directly from the internet, hoops that aren't too loud, which is like very coded, like very deeply coded, loaded. sorry, that's like a really loaded statement. And then, yeah, so it's like the minimal look, sheer colors. Also, these sheer colors are like pinks and peaches, which like, as we know, like suit, like that's sheer for someone who is white. Like that's a, like that comes off as neutral for people who are white. So there's a lot in that trend that I take issue with. I also take issue with the idea of like classiness being equated to like a slicked down bun and like hair being super flat and like not lifeless, but like anything, like any, like, because it kind of gives the idea that like any frizz or curl is an imperfection that should be changed, which is kind of a toxic narrative. And then with that trend is the whole like like that's a whole other thing that I'm not going to go into today because that's a whole other discussion. But, you know, the whole idea that like wellness is waking up at 5 a.m. and taking a Pilates class and then drinking a green juice with 8 different green vegetables in it. And then like journaling for 20 minutes, which is great. And that's like a really healthy way to live. But it is like a toxic narrative to give to people. And it's kind of an unattainable standard, like most other standards. So yeah, I just wanted to talk about like a little bit more about purity politics. So the idea here is that white girls, like white women, can be beautiful with acne, because basically what purity politics means is like the whole idea of being virtuous and beauty is virtue. And so the idea with like the light coverage makeup and all of this is great because it does encourage like, don't cover up your face, like don't cover up too much, etc., etc. Like you can be beautiful with acne, etc., etc. But it's kind of the idea of like you're virtuous, like you're beautiful from within, so you don't need to cover up. But I think that this, like, kindness is not extended to, like, all women equally. I would say that, like, what makes it okay for you to have imperfections is precisely one's whiteness, because one therefore, like, has virtue and you can still be desirable, which points to the deeper fact that, like, one's whiteness is what makes them desirable. So for example, like, another example of this is, you know, the whole, like, dad bod trend that kind of came out, I want to say, like, circa 2015, when it was like, oh, like, men don't, like, and men's body standards are something that we don't really address that much. It was like, oh, men don't have to be shredded and, like, go to the gym. Like, dad bods are cool. Like, look at Leo. Like, he's still, like, Leonardo DiCaprio is still so attractive, like, all these years down the line, but he has, like, a dad bod now. I would argue that, like, this trend of, like, dad bods has I've never once seen, like, a non-white body be praised for a dad bod on the internet. And I think that that speaks, again, to purity politics and the idea that, like this okay to be imperfectional, like expanding like what's it called, beauty standards, is like only extended over to certain people in society, which is upsetting to say the least. And I also just want to point out that, yeah, like, so much of this, like, beauty standards are, like, were created by white men, and like, black women, women of color, but specifically, I'm saying black women specifically, like, in America, in the context of slavery, where that was, like, a really, like, I mean, American society is essentially built off most of what, like, most of American society is the legacy of, like the colonial and, like, slavery era. And, like, white femininity is constructed in opposition to black femininity, which is why I'm finding it really interesting to be seeing comments like neutral colors, like outfits that aren't too loud. Like, these are trends, like, you can like neutral colors. You can, like, I'm wearing, like, all black right now. Like, I love to wear, like, monochromatic outfits. But it's the idea of, like, not being too loud, to be, like, respectable and classy and, like, better than others, that I do take issue with, because it kind of speaks to the whole idea of, like, white women as virtuous. And, for example, like, hoops that aren't too loud, like, loud is a coded word for, like, black women, as opposed to being the ideal, which is silent and virtuous. And I, like, urge women to pay attention to words that they use, because even if you think that maybe, oh, but, like, then I look classy, et cetera, like, these words are still used to harm you. Like, let's not forget that, like, the people that invented these terms, this coded language, like, it is white men, and, like, black women's femininity is created in juxtaposition to white women's femininity, but white women's femininity is still used to control them. Like the image of being, like, pure and kind and gentle is still used against you, even if you think that in the short run, like, it might be an advantage. Also, I have a really great example of this. It is on Euphoria, so I'm not going to spoil, because I know a lot of people haven't seen it yet. I only just started season 2, so I won't bring it up. But purity politics really comes out in Euphoria, which I think is really interesting. So I urge you guys to, like, pay attention to that. And on the note of natural beauty and acceptance of individuals in their natural state, I'm going to segue into the discussion of black hair. Hair is perhaps one of the most contentious topics within the black community, and I could probably spend a lifetime talking about this. There are just books and books and books about this. So I'm not an expert. I'm not a professional. All I have is lived experience, but I do have 21 years as of today. It's my birthday today. So I do have 21 years of experience with black hair. So I'm just going to give you guys my 2 cents. But again, I'm not a professional. I don't have a written essay. I don't have that much to go off. I just have my little bullet points of, like, make sure you mention this, make sure you mention this. So bear with me. I've been exposed to a lot of opinions, and my opinions have shifted as I've shifted, like, who I've hung out with socially and what I've exposed myself to on the internet, and once I've started, like, reading and stuff, which is definitely interesting. So I just want to start off by saying that for how you style your hair for many black women is probably the most political and intense challenge that you can face on the daily. Like, that's probably one of the biggest, most everyday challenges, because how you style your hair in a day can affect if you get an interview. how people treat you, how seriously people take you, if you get an internship. Like, for example, I had an interview like 2 weeks ago and I was panicking because I called my boyfriend and was like, how do I style my hair? Like, how should I do it? What do you think is appropriate? Like, I, because anything you do can be used against you. If I let my hair like roam the way that it grows out of my head, that's absolutely unacceptable. I think the core takeaway here that like I would like everyone who's listening to take away is that the way that black hair grows out of black women's head is considered unacceptable by any standard. It's completely unacceptable. If I have like, I'm sitting here with like full afro, like curls and stuff. I don't know if people would consider that quote unquote professional for an interview, which I think is very unfair. It's scary to do like a style that's more fun. People use words like ghetto, people use words like wild, unprofessional. If you straighten your hair or you perm it, you are at risk of being told that you're whitewashed, and that some people do it for maintenance. I think that with you can permanently straighten your hair for about six weeks at a time with like permanent treatments or like keratin treatments, things like it is keratin treatments, things like this at salons. It can be extremely damaging. There are lots of reports in the US about black women's likelihood to like have issues with cancer later on because of the amount of chemicals that they put in with like hair relaxers throughout their lives, and it's like really sad. But this like can be a personal choice just for maintenance, because it's easy, because you like the style. This has been really contentious in the past because people have said that it's salon oppression, that it's white beauty standards, because it's true that before, a lot of people say, but before white people came along, you had never seen hair like that, which is a fair statement. I don't really know what the practices were at the time, because as we know, they were already braiding, they were twisting, they were locking, they were doing a lot of things. So if they found a way to make the hair texture a bit straighter, I wouldn't be surprised, but I do probably think that it was when white people came along that straight hair came along. So we can say that it's internalized, like beauty standards and oppression and stuff. But yeah, if you wear your hair like that, you're at risk of being called whitewashed. And for someone like me with my personal interests, I take a lot of interest in like gender studies, human rights, social justice stuff. So like if I'm ever applying for a job, I'm probably going to be in a realm with people who are going to be looking at that. And you do run the risk of being seen as not black enough if you don't wear your hair a certain way. Again, like just to point out how serious this is, Angela Davis, who's like a really massive, I hope everyone who's listening knows who Angela Davis is, because like, come on. But Angela Davis wore her afro to federal court, and that made the news because it was such a big deal that on such a serious occasion, she would wear her hair natural, which speaks volumes. Another thing is that New York passed, I think it's called the Crown Act. And again, I think 2013, but I really don't know. But it was around that time. So like in the 2010s, they passed an act that means that you can't discriminate on people based on based on how they wear their hair in the workplace. And the fact that this is something that has to be like codified into written law, because people will really not employ you based on the way that your hair looks. I think that it has to do with how your skin color looks, but like hair plays a massive role in how like different black people get taken, like on how seriously different black people get taken seriously. So that's a pretty big problem. Even Zendaya, who's like a beloved celebrity by pretty much everyone. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone. I've never even seen her get bashed on the internet, to be honest. Like she's pretty universally adored. Who she benefits from colorism. So if you don't know what colorism is, it's essentially having light skin privilege. So for example, I'm mixed race. So that means that I have more privilege than someone who has dark skin, because I am more white passing. And I have more, like, or I'm more likely to have white features, which means that white people will kind of, like, socially reward me for this and tell me, oh, but you have, like, nice features, or you have soft features and things like this. And, like, we benefit a lot from this privilege. And, for example, colorism can be, like, in a book, we, like, the main character can be, like, a black woman from Africa, but then they will cast someone who is, like mixed race, such as myself, who does not at all like portray this idea. But it's because white people find lighter skin tones that resemble their own to be more desirable. So this is colorism. So Zendaya is like a beneficiary of colorism, and she still was subject to attack when she wore locks, like faux dreadlocks, to an award show. I forget which one it was, and there was a news, like a just, you know, like those after show like talks, like those shows, those after show like, yeah, talks, where a lady said that her hair probably smells like patchouli oil and weed, which is probably one of the most horrendous things I've heard. Just like very overt, just no, like fully mask off, like no, like not even hiding it. Like that was just pretty crazy when that happened. And so like she proved a, like she went out and proved a point and has been wearing like lots of various like natural hairstyles ever since, because this was pretty crazy and shocking. And she is just trying to show that like natural hair is classy. It is worthy of like an occasion. For example, today is my 21st birthday, and I'm like conditioned to think, okay, but what do I do with my hair to make it special? I got really, really, really busy. Anyone who knows me knows that I was like beyond busy. Like I've been busy for the last 6 days, so I haven't really been able to do anything to my hair. But had I been able to, I probably would have like done like a special ponytail thing or whatever. But it's just like the idea that like even when I'm actively trying to, we end up, I mean, it's okay to like change your hair on an occasion, but I do think that we are conditioned to think that like our natural hair isn't enough for an occasion. It's not classy, it's not special, it's not it's just like not worthy and like special hair, professional hair, etc. So like that is really deeply ingrained. Also like with colorism comes sorry, a phenomenon called texturism. So I feel like with all of the stuff from like the BLM movement when it was really like popping off in 2020, I feel like a lot of people might be familiar with these terms by now, because on Instagram so many like infographics and such have been circulating that people know the words, but I'm just gonna redefine the keywords just to be sure. So texturism is basically like colorism, kind of like a hierarchy of curled hair. So it means that like if I have a loose curl pattern, I'm more likely to be accepted and like be told that I have quote unquote good hair. Because again, it resembles like a white person with curly hair as opposed to like natural black hair, which can be a lot coilier, and like the curls are so tight that it creates like coils instead. And like texturism is a really massive problem like within the black community. Like I would say that that's a really big issue. It's, for example, and this is where colorism and texturism like kind of intermingle on that front, because people will say like, oh, like, are you mixed? You have such good hair. Like I've been told like, oh, you, I mean, I'm very obviously mixed race, but in the summer I get very, very dark. And so it's harder to tell the difference. And people will come up to me and say like, oh, you must be mixed because like you're so dark, but you're mixed because you have such good hair. Like how come your hair's so good? And like that, like the levels of racism that are in that statement are really problematic. It's like, oh, well, you must be white because you have good hair. And then also good hair means like you have more white passing hair. So there are definitely some issues there. And even within the black community, these are things that like white people will tell you with no, like they don't even care. I don't really know. Like people will just say that to you, but, or like the you're pretty for a black girl thing, which we'll get to in a minute. But within the black community, like there's like a whole generational thing of like the older generations used to like force children to. My grandma tried to get my mom to like perm my hair for years, and my mom refused just because of like the amount of chemicals that were in there. She refused to put them on my head, and I'm really glad that she did. But it's so deeply like it's like a learned thing. And also we have to remember, like, before we attack like the older generation of like black grandmas, black aunties, etc., who were like trying to force us to get our hair permed, that at the time, like I'm saying, like with the Crown Act, like this wasn't around, and like people on social media advocating for like natural hair was not a thing. If I were a black woman in the 60s, 70s, 80s, I don't know if I would send my daughter to like an interview with an afro. I don't know if that was actually as well. I don't know. I feel like if I had my same beliefs as today, like I'm a strong advocate for natural hair and like the black liberation movement, but still like it did like tangibly affect people's livelihoods to wear their hair in a certain way. It is political, like it's a political choice, both within and without your community. Like it's for the mainstream population, it will have an effect on how you're treated, and even within. So it like, you know, I think like grandma's trying to force us to get perms on. I think it comes from maybe a better place than I at least have like seen it in the last few years. I'm just like getting another idea, and I just want to hop back onto like the beauty standards thing for a minute, and talk about like somewhat cultural appropriation. I just want to say that like, for example, like, yeah, like curly hair, like when perms are a massive thing, like in the 80s, when like really voluminous hair is a thing, that gets co-opted from Black women. Also that like nails and like, for example, like, you know, like the Kim Kardashian body, like the slim thick body, all this stuff. Like these are things that are like kind of taken away from Black women. And then that it's impossible to reappropriate them. So what I'm trying to say essentially is that I'm trying to kind of talk about like, that was for a while when a lot of Black female rappers came onto the scene, a lot of the names were like Black Doll, like Asian Doll. There are a lot of dolls. And then there was also like Asian or like light skin or something like this or that. And I just wanted to like bring that back to like both, because like there's like curly head this, curly head that, or like big curls. Like these are all like the pseudonyms that people were using. And I just want to like tie it all together and just mention the fact that like, for Black women, a lot of the times what makes you beautiful in society is precisely your least Black feature. So, like, a lot of people will compliment, like, oh, like, you straightened your hair. This looks super good. I feel like the kind of, like, with everything that's been going around on Instagram, I feel like people are smarter than to say that out loud now. But at least when I was in high school, every time I straightened my hair, I looked so much better. This is so much better. My grandma used to tell me that, like, I have really soft features because my dad has, like, very, like, African features. Like, he has really big lips, really big nose. And I took slightly more from my mom on that end. I don't have very big lips, and I have like a medium nose. Like it's not very big, it's not very small, it's not very noticeable. But I want to say that like the things that have been praised for me have been like, well, like the color of your skin, like it's all the things that like aren't African features. So like as much as like it's been like, there's been like really toxic behavior within the Black community of like not only kind of like leaning into different cultures, and kind of appropriating them, or like perpetuating things that are really unhealthy for the Black community. I do want to point out that it is like a survival mechanism, and it is like a strategic tactic to do that so that you can like get attention and get views and like, you know, get the same praise that everybody else can. Yeah, it's like it's a really complicated affair. Hair is a complicated affair. It remains really, it's political and it's very emotional as well. It's like a very, everyone has had separate experiences. I've had lots of different experiences with my hair. I've worn it in like just about every style, and it's complicated. Yeah, I think that's about it. So I'm just gonna like transition with a song. So I'm just gonna pass it over to Luca and I'm just gonna transition with a song for a while, and we'll be back in like 15 minutes for an interview.
Peng Black girls in my area cold. Dark skin, light skin, medium tones. Permitting braids, got mini afros. Thick lips, got hips, some of us don't. Big nose contour, some of us won't. Never wanna put us in the media, bro. Wanna fat booty like Kardashians. Wanna fat booty like my auntie got a yo. Wheel up the blood clot, tell her reload it. I've got the camera, my girls are posing. I need some backup, then my ones are rolling. Grown women things, I'm never at risk. Mind my own business, I'm never in mess. Who am I? I ain't bae, get a slice of the cake. Want a house with a view and a new pair of shoes. Keep it real from the jump, Gucci gang, little pump. Little vibe, little bass, little kick, little snare, little lies, big truths. Do you? They don't care. Do you? They don't care. Get your ass out the box and build up from there. I don't have a gang with me, but I still walk with a gangster lean. I rock Nikes cause we think they're clean. MJ leather jacket, be it Billie Jean. MJ leather jacket cause I think I'm bad.
That's cool, I like it. The growth, the lie, the pain, the fight. We love, we fight, we hurt, we cry. He paid the price, you'll be alright.
I think I need some time. echoes. These black girls need to be in the shows. Be on the runways, not just mood boards. On top of that, we got a steam in your team. Look at your crown, natural, relaxed, out of Jericho. One time soft and sheen. Where black girl magic is sometimes blue. Might have broke a hairband or two. Raise my voice, you're gonna say that I'm angry. Kiss my teeth, and now you say that I'm hood. Kid at 16, you say it's my destiny. Drive a range, you think I'm up to no good. Give us a break and let us breathe, man. Give us a chance, let us achieve, fam. And I know that my hair looks a bit different today. So don't touch my hair.
Like, new hair, who this? Old black woman jacket and a bantu twist. Look, mind over matter, I can handle this. We're fine, took a second of awards and risk. See, I think that I care too much, but all of some covers see air. Two cups, I've got nothing to show, but you love, check my flaws and all my trials. I was black back when it wasn't even in style, that's cool.
I like it, the growth, the light, the pain, the fight. We love, we fight.
Yeah. The vibes are wine bottles, little shuffles, and a couple friends. PlayStation, Grand Theft, and some M&Ms. New work, more money than a vacation. You work hard and play harder, gotta make it make sense. Gotta make arrangements for my unborns. A one baby daddy situation was the old norm. These lot just wanna swipe right and watch you porn. And I'm just trying to build a legacy. Okay, now what to Lexa more? My mom ain't raised no bitch. My mother had me in some corduroy and some Nike kicks. My father had me on the keyboard at the age of six. My sister influenced a certain love I have for hits. My brother likewise and hooked me up with plenty lines. Looking back at it, he probably was committing crimes. In certain places, they're just calling that shit getting by. But getting by, you either entertain or 9 to 5. It didn't matter when we're quarantined. It didn't matter when we're broke. I had to take a little second, man. I took a second, then I... You really think we're only standing by? You need to open your eyes. Yeah. Wine bottles and watching my mind shuffle, but the same thought is on repeat. Constantly eating from this tree in which Eve did. I find my struggles follow from what she did, but I use woman, so what we did. Am I conceited for my thoughts? I place the ticking cross inside a knot. Make a game of noughts and crosses worth a thought. An iron session, never deemed to judge but rule the court. Sugarcoating truth, that ain't fit for thought. That's a fat ass lying on your ass. Diabetes ass answer. They never answer my question. Does wearing weave make me any less of a black girl? They say you nigga make me ignorant or forgiving. Just like, should I just be leaving or be living? Should I just be leaving or be living? Every time I get a little down. Me, I say 5'10", I'm calm, don't grow again. Bad with a pen, they up the shooter's gang. Short box, braids, rebox, a hooligan. But Zen, I am a gen, tell friends to wait. 5'10", I'm calm, don't grow again. Bad with a pen, they up the shooter's gang. Short box, braids, rebox, a hooligan. But Zen, I am a gen, tell friends to tell a friend.
A bit. We've been running, beating, tucked down, cause our skin.
I shine right through the hate.
I'm a king, she a queen, they all know we're great. I know you a fan, who you want my style? Can you rock a paint chain? Can you rock my sorrows? I know they're afraid, cause I'm educated. Yeah, you're looking not great.
honest, I'm
melanin man.
No, 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 that ain't a thing. Yeah. Ooh, I see that you're a fan. Oh, no. My heritage is your new trend. Yeah. Nah, 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 nah. There they go. They so fly.
Melanin man.
Same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Puffin' on stramonium, underground like potholes, but going five sold these bars like art in the Smithsonian. These vultures for custodians, homeless men, horny overgen dude. Rise at my laptop looking at Red Fallopian too. They like your Joey, you rule. I'm like, if only you knew. I'm only in school for cosmology, that's why I act as lonely as you. You see, I'm wise behind my ears and my peers, so my voice over the snares is the only way they hear. But I got behind my membrane, but I've been smoking chemstrain. So lately I've been having hard times with remembering. But be patient, my studies prove Egyptians ain't shit, cause I believe that we could be like Neo in the Matrix. But fuck it, I'm erratic. Mama locked me in the attic. Please till I draw on the static and my somatic anatomy and come out imputed with futures of blueprints and illmatics. I've been going raw. This is how I feel rapping. We get y'all certain tactics, so y'all can't even gas us. We taught you how to be prepared, but still attacking the masses. Y'all better get y'all gases, cause we about to annihilate
the new Babylon Empire.
My empire gates in the Empire State. I'm on a higher platform. Look at the way they platform. Never fuck with phony men, cause I don't like my back torn. Nigga, ask Quan, it's that top rhyme that you ain't used to. Keep it neutral to school and then tell him no beef like noodles. Keep it neutral just so you can scoop. I tell him no beef like noodles. It's world domination, nation. You tuned into my station. Always got the doobie in the motherfucking nation. Always got the trees, so what the fuck you mean I ain't about to rise to the top with my fucking team? World domination, nation, you tuned into my station. Always got the doobie in the motherfucking nation. Always got the trees, so what the fuck you mean I ain't about to rise to the top with my fucking team?
Yo, who the fuck passed you the mic?
Hi everyone, I'm back. This is just a little PSA to say you should go out and read a book. So basically what I'm trying to say is what I was saying today is very heavy and is more emotional for some people than others because of like varied personal experiences. And what I'm saying about how, like what I was talking about, when I tell you there is literature, I mean there is a genre of literature about black hair, the history of black hair. For example, like anyone who's slightly more educated on the subject will know that hair is deeply, deeply political because it used to be a statement of your status and wealth, your tribe and your belonging in Africa. And when the colonizers came, when the slave owners came, they shaved people's heads so that thereby like removing their status and their identity and shipped them off. So it is like really, it is a very deep subject. It still continues to hurt people on the daily. So I do urge you to like, you know, support a black author and like buy a black book or like watch a TED talk or something, because there is definitely not a lack of material out there for you to learn about these topics. So I urge you to like read about it, educate yourselves on it. Obviously, we can always talk about it, with your friends. Discussion is always great, but just a reminder to not add like emotional labor to your friends who don't necessarily have to tell you when there isn't a, but there are people doing PhDs, there are people doing masters, even in undergrad, there are people doing research. So, you know, go see them. Second reminder of the day is to remember that this is a black talk. This is about the entire black community. That includes black trans people. That includes gay trans people, non-binary trans people, black women. Like, all is, like, every black life is an important black life. So that's just my little PSA for you all.
King already, my baby, you know it. Top everything, everything, you know it. King already, already, you know it. Shine already, time already, shine already, time already, shine already, time already, shine already, time already.
Shine already, time already, the line already, time already, shine already, the time already, the line already, the time already. Try to stop it, me say no, no, no. Royalty say don't you, no, no, no. Try to stop it, me say go, 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 go. Bubble up and watch it go, 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 go.
Oh, diamonds on my fist, fighting demons, y'all. Oh, come and rest your head, take your crown off. Oh, woke up in the phone, need to take it slow. Oh, he said I'm moving too fast, need to take it slow. Oh, take it slow, oh, oh. Take it slow, oh, oh. Trying to take my baby home, oh, oh. Take it slow, oh, oh.
Remember who you are. Real king always be no. Give a be better. I show your people my love. It's time already, I say it's time already. It's line already, I say it's line already. Only you got the remedy, I say you got the remedy. Shine your body, shine your body.
Be your own king, make nobody come rule your world. Yo, 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 yo. Be your own king, make nobody come rule your world. Be your own king, make
everything, everything, you know it. Show them the way, you know it, you know it, you know it.
Hello, my name is Luca. I am the media representative for BSN, and today we are here with Rowan and Kemba, and they are two very important Black activists and artists. And could you guys introduce yourselves?
Hello, everyone. My name is Rowan Higgins, and I'm a spoken word artist, a mother of an 18-year-old. I'm a speaker, coach, and my focus is cultural and creative literacy and community well-being.
Good afternoon. My name is Kemba Mitchell. I am a community youth and social justice activist. I am currently working in the educational system. I just have a passion for youth advocacy and amplifying their voices.
Okay, so I just want to ask the both of you, what kind of drew you to this field, and why do you want to help the Black community here in Montreal?
So for me, being born in Montreal, my mother was born here, as well as my grandmother, and seeing my mother go through so much in this city, being Black, being Anglophone, it was imperative for me to do something, kind of like continue the legacy she left. She passed many years ago. So in everything I do, it is for contributing to the necessary and I just, anything I can do to support members of the Black and specifically African diaspora, it's necessary. Anything I do, be it community, be it in school, it's just something that I take very personal. I do whatever it takes to make, you know, be that person that I needed when I was younger. It was not easy growing up in Montreal, predominantly always the only Black child in school, in my classes, in any activities I was doing. It was really difficult. So I remember being in those moments, and I think about what would have been important for me in terms of mentorship. So yeah, anything I do, it's really directed towards the empowering our youth and letting them know that they have the capability, despite what they learn, despite what they see, to do whatever that they want to do and to be whatever they wish to be.
And for myself, there was no focus. It didn't happen because it was a plan. I was an at-risk youth myself. I was in foster care, couch surfing. So the whole focus was survival. But one of the jobs I had an opportunity to do is work at day camps. And they happened to be Malcolm X Day Camp in LaSalle, Patrice Lumumba in NDG, Marcus Garvey in Côte d'Ige. So, and then I ended up working later on in Youth in Motions and all these different spaces, like leadership in Mandela. They just ended up being run by Black organizations. And through doing that, when I became an educator with the EMSB and working in the schools, it was around 2014, I realized that no youth has learned about their own history. And, you know, we learned Quebec history, world history, and it's just about wars and takeover and you know, the English, the French is coming, the British is coming. Like, you know, it's like, okay, but what are we learning about our heritage as individuals, you know? And that's when I started speaking on something I call Truth Empire and helping young people know their roots. But the fact is, the population, if you will, that is witnessing themselves not in a good light, and there's no good positive representation. Or when you have a young person saying, I'm going to be a basketball player, I'm going to be a rapper, and that's where it stops. Something has to be done. So then the focal point for me became empowering young people to know that they can accomplish things. And being a doctor doesn't stop at age 5, because I want to be a fireman. That's what you hear in kindergarten. But after that, when they're in grade 5, 6, in junior high, they're not saying, I want to be a doctor. What you might hear, and I've done this in with all ages, I'll go in an auditorium, I'll go in a space and say, okay, how many people here, if they're like, want to be a nurse? Majority of their hands go up. How many of you have parents who are a nurse? Majority of their hands go up if they're from the Black community. And that's all because that's what we identify with, being educators and being in the helping field, being in a health field, but at a lower level, not to be a pediatrician, not to be a surgeon. They don't see it for themselves. And so, yeah, that's where the passion became very strong. It became a mission of mine, and to let them know that they have a voice and they can see themselves in other places. So bridging people together and saying, look, here's a Black scientist, a Black engineer. And you see their eyes open up, and it just sets and carves out a new world for them.
And presenting these images to them, because they do not see those in the schools. So, you know, becoming the voices that they're missing in the schools. And I think that you've seen it so much through our own educational system. I never had a teacher. I never had a Black teacher until I was in university. And I always think about, you know, if I had that, a Black teacher, perhaps I would have wanted to become one. You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, like you just said, I didn't really have any Black people to look up to growing up because I didn't grow up in Canada. So I just wanted to ask a little bit about how you guys were personally affected by your work, just because it seems like both of your work has come out of a necessity to help other people. And I know that being in that position can kind of take away from your personal life and like yourself. So I just want to ask a little bit about how that affected both of you guys.
Well, I definitely had to set the boundaries over the years. Because when you start in any field of help, helping others, of heart leadership and heart service, you get moments where you get caught up and forget about yourself. Mm-hmm. Self-care was not something that was ever mentioned. We didn't have any highlight reels to show you, like, hey, remember to drink your water, remember to move your body every 50 minutes, don't be sedentary. Like, no, it was burn and grind. But that's what we've also learned from our parents, right, who were double shifting just to put food on the table. So I ended up replicating that, but it just ended up being in service. But the difference is like, you're not just working at a factory, you're working with people who have such severe trauma issues, and it transfers. So I had to go through a burnout pretty early in my career. I was 24 years old, ended up in an MRI machine, couldn't feel the left side, my right side of my face, couldn't feel my fingers, couldn't feel my extremities. And they thought there was something on my brain. And after that whole ordeal of missing my first day of work, by the way, never took a sick day off for years. They were like, this is burnout. I said, what? I thought I was going to die. I thought I was having a stroke. I thought I had MS. I was falling and I could not walk. And that was because of stress. I was going to Concordia full time, somehow working two jobs, batch out of school board. But this was just being in my full element of working with kids. I had the passion, but I forgot that I needed to get rest. And so this job is pretty, you have to be high functioning in my role as a special education technician or special care counselor. You are running around, you're dealing in group home detention spaces, you're restraining kids when they're having episodes. You are the crisis interventionist, if you will. So when they call you to this classroom and you're diffusing things all the time, I only knew fires. And that's when I started to pivot in my career, when I said, I don't want to be part of the intervention. I want to be part of the prevention aspect. How do we help young kids or youth know how to deal with their stress, to self-regulate, to be able to ground themselves and anchor themselves? But that's when I realized I did not know how to do that myself. I only knew how to deal in dysfunction, in fire. And that's a lot of us in the Black community. We only know how to cope with crisis. And how did I know that? I remember a professor saying, hey, I have some good news and bad news. Which one do you want first? And I said the bad news. Because the bad news I knew how to process. Good news made me uncomfortable. Like many of us in this room, somebody's like, oh my gosh, you look so beautiful. Too much attention, you start to feel uncomfortable in your skin. But to say something negative, you're almost ready for it. And you're like, oh my gosh, and you talk about it. But the positivity, I did not know how to absorb rest, time, nourishing myself. It's still a challenge today, like eating without looking at the phone or having a conversation, just being grounded. And that's something that I realize it's not just about my kids. As adults, we have not learned to process things, to deal with our trauma and hurt, especially when it's repressed. So that's a journey for me. And I the biggest situation, I would say, is I had my daughter. There was a crisis with the police jumping some young people at a park. And they beat them up pretty bad. And it was happening pretty often. So I went up there. I had my daughter in the car. And I stayed in the car. I had a young person stay in the car with my daughter while we filmed the police. We had undercover lawyers, undercover reporters there to witness the situation. And that was the last day. I think my daughter was 5 years old. That was the last day I've ever shown up on site again since I've been a parent in a crisis. Now I send people. I delegate. I've learned the art of delegation when it comes to crisis. I said, this is not healthy. It was late taking my child out. I can't roll like that anymore. And let other people do it. So that's how it's shifted, where I've had to, my daughter had brought it to my attention, the reality of I am a parent and I'm not a savior. I can't save the world. I need to deal with my own household first.
Yeah, that's a lot of parallels, I would have to say. For me, I think about as Black parents always tell you is that kind of thing where, a lot of white people don't understand that we're taught to work twice as hard. You got to do that to get ahead. And so I always had that in the back of my head. And so I put a lot of pressure on myself to be successful. And I got into the corporate world. And I soon realized that as you move up, there's less people that look like you. And so many instances in many spaces, I was the only Black female Anglophone. And I didn't know what was happening at that time. Now we have words to address it, like microaggression and macroaggressions. But I didn't know what this was that I was feeling at the time. I just felt I was purposely excluded.